Today's Medal of Honor moment goes to Alphonse Garandi. Garandi was born in 1868 in Guadalupe in the West Andes. He did serve in the Spanish-American War. He did serve in the U.S. Navy, and he served aboard the USS Petrel. He was awarded for action during peacetime, which was the interim from 1899 to 1910. The President of the United States, in the name of the Congress, takes pleasure in presenting the Medal of Honor to Seaman Alphonse Garandi of the U.S. Navy for extraordinary heroism in the line of his profession while serving aboard the USS Petrel, fearlessly exposing his own life to danger for the saving of others on the occasion of the fire on board that vessel on March 31, 1901. Garandi died in 1941, and he is interred in the Philadelphia National Cemetery in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And we're back with another segment of my interview with Adventures in Cemetery Hoppings, Tracy Rylands.
Okay, now I did want to ask you something because, again, it was probably, I would imagine, about 5 years ago or so that you and I became acquainted online. So I'm curious, what are some of the big changes that you've seen in this world that I kind of feel, you know, I feel necrotourism was kind of still closeted 5 years ago, but it is really coming out.
Yes.
Like crazy now.
I think it's true, and I think the pandemic has actually helped with that, if you can believe it, because, you know, you can't gather in groups and safely, really, and, you know, you can go to a cemetery anytime because everybody's already dead, so you don't have to worry about getting infected with COVID because there's nobody around, and it's, I know that I've seen many, especially on Twitter, articles about cemeteries in London that people have been visiting that they never visited before because it's a chance to get out and walk around a bit without having to worry about breaking lockdown rules and so forth. But yes, I know when I started 8 years ago, I was definitely an oddball thing, I think. And when I would tell people what I was doing, I got a lot of strange looks at parties. But then they'd ask me, you know, what about this? And then it would, people would start walking up and getting and joining in on the conversation. And I, you know, it's been interesting to see that interest grow with, okay, whereas in the past you might go to a big city and visit the museums and the parks and the zoos. And now people are starting to visit the cemeteries too, because, you know, they're also a park-like, you know, environment in many situations, but also bird watching, architectural styles, and a chance to, you know, do some history at the same time. And it's exciting to me to see it because it definitely wasn't much of the case when I started doing this.
Yeah, it's one of my missions to make sure that the general public stops viewing cemeteries in the way Hollywood has taught us to look.
Right, right. It's dark, gloomy, scary places where people cry a lot.
Exactly. Or, yeah, you know, and to your point about the COVID safety of the cemeteries, you know, with all the traveling that we do, we generally do probably at least 2 trips a month. And when we do them, we rarely see people in the cemeteries. Mm-hmm. We see hotel clerks when we check in, when you check into a hotel. Then we also, the only thing that has really changed for us is when we were randomly looking for a grave, a lot of cemeteries don't want you to come in the office anymore. They'll like leave you the information in the mailbox or they'll text it to you.
Yeah.
We had several in Michigan that did that. They would text us the information on a map. So sure, they don't mind in some ways because then they have to deal with the public less. Then they can just text us. They'll probably keep those procedures.
Well, it's interesting because when I was in Knoxville over... I think it was Thanksgiving, and I went to a cemetery that I had not been to before that was fairly large, and it did have an office, and it said, you know, call us, and we'll come to the door, And he did. And the guy did, he let me in, and, you know, we stayed distant, and I told him what I was doing. And he said, well, we actually have a historian. And I was like, what? You right. have a cemetery historian? And he's like, well, yeah. And he goes, he's not here right now, but here's his pamphlets and stuff that he's written. So he gave me a bunch of stuff. And then later, when I was out on the grounds, I see this golf cart coming my way. And it was the cemetery historian, masked up and wanting to tell me everything. And so it was really funny. It was great. It was one of my best cemetery experiences ever. And he wasn't going to let COVID stop him. So we stood, you know, at a good distance apart, but we both had our masks on, and he talked my ear off, and it was wonderful. I loved every minute of it. So it was great.
Yeah, I do find it amazing the variances that people wouldn't even understand in our community, that some cemeteries despise what we do and others welcome it with open arms. So sometimes it's very touch and go with what we encounter.
Yeah, it's weird, and that's it's so much so that I usually assume, probably wrongly, that a cemetery is not going to welcome me, and so I just kind of tend to do my work on my own and not call the office and say, what do you have, can I talk to you, whatever. But I have found that when I do kind of throw my assumptions aside, I'll get surprised. Because when I was preparing to go to Denver a couple of years ago, I knew I was going to go to Fairmount, and I thought, why don't you just call and see if they'd be interested in showing you around, because you're coming from out of town. And I was floored that the guy said, we'd love to have you, I will personally take you around in my golf cart and you can see everything.
Right.
And that's exactly what happened. And it was one of the best experiences ever, because he lived up to exactly what he said. And I told him, I said, look, I'm not here to buy a marker. I'm not here to, you know, buy a plot. You will not financially gain in any way from my visit. And he goes, I don't care. I want you to see what I see every day and what I love. And it was a great experience. And out of that came some great blog posts. And I think as a result, they got some coverage too from my writing. And so I think we both won in that situation. But that's a rarity. I rarely call and ask. And I should do it more often, because maybe not now, but in the future when COVID has perhaps become more of a, you know, I wouldn't say normal part of our lives, but an incorporated part of our lives, I'll be able to do that and get more personalized tours like that. Because when it happens, it's magical, because I get to see stuff that I probably might not have been aware of. And the same applies to, like, when you and I got together and you showed me around Spring Grove. I mean, I wouldn't have known where Chunky was. I wouldn't have known where, you know, the dog was. I wouldn't have known a lot of that on my own. And I only had a couple of hours there, and, you know, made all the difference in the world.
Yeah, it definitely helps when somebody is, especially when you're there for specific targets and they're able to point them out to you.
Right.
I've had the gamut of, you know, I will tell you, you know, to your point, I've had much more success with the cemeteries, but who seems to resist what we do more? It's the places that are larger attractions. And sadly, it's the presidents where I've had the most problems. At Washington, at Jefferson, at Andrew Jackson. In coming weeks, I'll be telling you all a story about how I almost got arrested by the federal guards at Jackson's grave, because they didn't want to honor an interview that I had set up, and I was pretty upset about it.
Oh,
yeah, they escorted me off the grounds in a nice way, but yeah, I even have video of that. I'm going to have to break that up one of these times. But, you know, with all the things that you and I have seen, we've been around the country, we've seen different things. You know, it's one of the reasons why I have been trying to create that panel of experts, of people who have been gaining information and learning things, because everywhere we go, and I know you have the same thing that other people don't see. When they stay in their home area, they see the same types of things, the same cemetery practices, whether they be good or bad. when we travel around the country, we see a variety of things, good or bad, and we learn a lot more.
Yes.
And the expertise that you have learned has now recently got you involved in a local cemetery association. Yes. I'd love for you to tell us about that.
Yeah, that has kind of been a situation in the making over the last several years. We moved from Tucker, these are suburbs of Atlanta, from Tucker to Dunwoody, which they're about 10 minutes apart, in 2015, so we could be closer to our church. And around that time, the Dunwoody Preservation Trust had found out about my blog, and I had written about some cemeteries over there. And they were like, well, would you be interested in getting involved? And I said, well, look, my son's entering third grade. I really don't have time to do that, but maybe in a couple of years. And, you know, they were cool with that. They were fine. And I did meet with their current, at that time, director of cemeteries, and we talked and things he was doing. And I actually did, a couple years ago, help lead a cemetery tour that they did of one of them. I took one corner of the cemetery and shared some of the stories, but it wasn't until, I guess it was October of last year, that I got a call and they asked if I would be interested in taking over the director of cemeteries role from the fellow who was stepping down. And I was like, what? I have never done anything like that. I don't know anything about cemetery restoration, like the fixing and repair of graves. I just know about going out and telling stories. And they were like, that's okay. Our outgoing guy is not leaving the trust and he will help. And I thought about it and I thought, you know, this is what I said I was going to do someday, that I was going to get my hands dirty and I needed to do it in my local community. And so I started doing that in January, and I'm still getting my feet wet and still learning and leading my first cemetery cleanup day at the end of March. So that's kind of exciting. Actually, some folks from Oakland did a survey of the cemetery we're going to have a tour at, because several of the markers were damaged by a tornado 7 years ago and that have been in need of repair for some time. And they did a survey, and hopefully we'll start phase one of the most damaged monuments this year. And I'm excited about that because I've never been involved in a lot of that. And so that's kind of that's been the latest step in my education of the cemetery world and making it a local passion, as well as going out and traveling around and telling stories on my blog.
See, that's just another avenue that takes you down the path of being an expert. And, you know, I have this strange saying that I've said for years, you don't know what you don't know until it's time for you to know it.
Yeah.
And now is the time
for you
to know how to move into the operations and restoration phase of this.
Stick around. There's more coming up with Tracy Rylands from Adventures in Cemetery Hopping.
Be sure to visit the Cemetery Podcast Facebook page at facebook.com/cemetery-podcast.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, right now we are going to focus on the feature grave. Now, this is one of those graves that you definitely need to put on your bucket list, put on your famous grave visiting list. This is the grave of a man who is known as a civil rights activist. He is also known as a philanthropist. He is also known as a professional boxer. He is from the city of Louisville. He was born there in 1942. He is known by some as a champion. He is known by others as his nickname, the greatest. Some call him by the name that his parents gave him, which is Cassius Marcellus Clay Jr. But most of the world knows this man as Muhammad Ali. let me give you a little bit of bio and reasoning why his grave is so important to visit. At the age of 18, in the light heavyweight division in the 1960 Olympics, he won the gold medal. In 1961, he became a Muslim. In 1964, he won the heavyweight championship from Sonny Liston. And right after that, he changed his name to Ali. In 1966, he refused to serve when he was drafted and chose to be a conscientious objector during the Vietnam War. But in the sports world, he is most known as being the heavyweight champion for several fights that are legendary. Number one, two fights against champion and trying to become champion again, Joe Frazier. Fights known as the Thrilla in Manila and the Fight of the Century. He was also known for the fight in the jungle against George Foreman. Now, in 1981, Ali retired from boxing, and shortly after that, in 1984, he announced that he had Parkinson's disease. But outside the ring, he was successful as a musician. He actually received two Grammy nominations. He also authored two autobiographies. Ali died in June of 2016 in Scottsdale, Arizona. And at his memorial service, which took place at the Yum Center in Louisville, Kentucky, his hometown, even former President Bill Clinton spoke. Ali is buried at the Cave Hill Cemetery in Louisville, Kentucky, in Jefferson County. Now, his grave setting is impressive. It contains two black granite benches that are there and meant for reflection. There is a upright black granite marker at the top that says Ali. And then there is a black granite grave blanket that has the words written on it. And I quote, "He took a few cups of love. He took one tablespoon of patience, one teaspoon of generosity, one pint of kindness. He took one quart of laughter, one pint of concern, and then he mixed willingness with happiness. He added lots of faith and he stirred it up well. Then he spread it all over the span of a lifetime and he served to each and every person he met." That is a quote that Ali gave to a reporter on how he wanted to be remembered. Now, the family marker at the top of the hill that says Ali has these words etched. Quote, "Service to others is the rent you pay for your room in heaven." End quote. And it is on the back of the plot, and it is also another quote that Ali made. Now, you can find his grave in Section U. When you're into Cave Hill, you just follow the green road, and it'll take you to Ali. Now, I have to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, we visited Cave Hill in 2018. Coincidentally, we were going to shoot Muhammad Ali's grave, and it happened to be the same weekend, the second year deathiversary. So when we pulled into Cave Hill, they had signs along the roadway that led you up until his grave. And it was a bird, then a bee, and a bird, then a bee. And I have to say, it was one of the most impressive graves I've visited. It is someone that I definitively experienced in my lifetime. So of many of the famous graves I visited, I haven't had personal experiences or reflections on these people. But Muhammad Ali was someone who was famous when I was young. He's a great man, as far as I'm concerned. But he is definitely a grave you need to visit to put on your list. There are several others at Cave Hill, but Muhammad Ali and the Cave Hill Cemetery are places you definitely need to visit and add to your Necro Travelers list. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this is going to be the announcement for the contest. If you are trying to win our Sugar Skull t-shirt, then this is what you need to do. Go to the Facebook page for the Cemetery Podcast, which is facebook.com/cemetery-podcast. like the page. Then go down to the photos and you will find the picture of the Crazy Horse Memorial. When you do, like the picture, and in the comments section, tag yourself. If you tag yourself in the photo and like the page, you are then entered for the contest. We will be drawing for the contest winner at the end of February. You can be a winner with the Cemetery Podcast. We're back with more of the interview with Tracy Rylands from Adventures in Cemetery Hopping.
We are discussing cemeteries with Tracy Rylands, how do I say that, you are the blogger.
Yeah.
I guess I don't know, I keep wanting to say host, like your, it's your radio program, but.
Well, when I took on the role of director of cemeteries for the trust, my husband said he wanted to change that to Empress of Death, but I said I didn't think the trust would like that. So,
you know, that's another reason why we got to change some of the humor and the perception of what's going on.
Right.
We all know that cemeteries are a place at times of sadness and mourning, they are not always.
No.
That's one of those key things that, you know, it's always important to introduce people in your community to the cemeteries is the best way possible. And I believe as early as possible, get kids involved, get them part of those volunteer units.
Right. Well,
I do want to talk to you a little more about actually your blog itself.
Sure.
I know, like, if you go to your site right now, you will find a variety of places that you've been over the years. It's kind of broke down by months so that you can search out the information. I was curious. I know it's possible to look that up, mm-hmm. but how well do you remember, and what was the subject of the first article you wrote?
Oh, I know exactly what it was. That came out of a find a grave request for a cemetery, a suburb north of me, near Johns Creek, Milton, in extreme North Fulton County, there's a Rogers Cemetery and a Rogers Bell Cemetery. Now, Rogers Bell Cemetery is the descendants of a plantation owner, John Rogers, who had a wife who was half Cherokee and half white. The other cemetery, Rogers Cemetery, is a black cemetery of the descendants of the slaves that worked on John Rogers' plantation. And the first time I went up there, it was like in November and it was very cold and I could not figure out where Rogers Bell was, but I found Rogers and visited that. And the thing that happened at Rogers that I'll never forget as long as I live is that I was brushing leaves off of a grave and found rubber snakes under the leaves. And I thought it was a real snake and I jumped about 10 feet off the ground. That scared out of me. Because when I was a teenager, I was bitten by a copperhead snake.
Wow.
So that was especially frightening to me. And I have never, never, ever since that time found another grave with fake snakes on it. So instead of snakes on a plane, I had snakes on a grave.
So I had a similar experience from something that I was not anticipating. But I was in Michigan and I was at the grave of Edsel Ford front of his mausoleum facing the lake. They had like a Wolverine. I was not even expecting a plastic Wolverine to be around the edge of this tomb. And when I came around the corner, I about jumped out of my skin because it was nothing I had seen or was even in. It wasn't on my radar of something to even see at a cemetery. And it just,
right.
And I went, oh, great. It's a big plastic Wolverine. I'm totally terrified over a little bit of plastic.
But you weren't expecting that little bit of plastic. That's
true.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. It's on my lexicon now, and the concept of it is there. So I'm prepared after those. And I know you have, after your adventures, some of the things you've seen, you never thought you would see, and the things you expected to see weren't even close to what they actually were.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, speaking of, like, at Spring Grove, you know, and that takes us to the current series. That's one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you this week, mm-hmm. is because you've been writing a 4-part series. This 3 weeks have already been through. Right. This 4th week is going to be actually debuting tomorrow. So, what do you got in store for us on the 4th week of the series?
Well, the 4th week, I'm still putting that together. I think I'm going to talk about some Cincinnati brewers that made German immigrants that made a pretty penny over beer, which there are many beer barons that were successful in Cincinnati. There are a couple. There's a baseball, a Cincinnati Reds grave that I'm probably going to talk about. And I'm debating whether or not to include a gentleman's monument that has several symbols on it that are interesting. He himself, his main claims of fame were just inventing engines and things like that. But his face is on his marker. He's got a beehive. He's got a arm with an anvil in it and an angel with an old man braiding her hair. I mean, you don't see that every day. So. And his children's graves, actually, I'm sure you remember this guy. His last name was Shield.
Right.
His children and his wives are. He lost all. I think all but one of his kids, and that one, you know, is a heartbreaker right there. So that's probably what you're going to be seeing.
Yeah, I have to say, you know, Spring Grove, as you know, prior to us interviewing off microphone, we were discussing about how Spring Grove is just endless, and being one of the three largest cemeteries in the country and encompassing such a wide variety of people, mm-hmm. and it was in the first wave of the Garden Park Cemetery, so
yes.
It's just everything is here. And you know, people forget in the history of Cincinnati, around the time in the mid to late 1800s, Cincinnati was like one of the biggest cities in America. So
mm-hmm.
we were
It certainly was. And they wanted to compete with the other big cities, and they wanted to do it right. And, you know, when I was reading about the origins of Spring Grove, you know, they had a committee that traveled to other cemeteries
across
in the country and to Europe. They went to Père Lachaise, and they wanted to see what was out there so that they could be as good, if not even better, at doing what they had done to honor those the deceased of Cincinnati, and I think they did an amazing job as a result.
Yeah, it is amazing. And you know, you think about Adolf Strauch and some of the guys you were talking about, and Levi Alton, these guys. The amazing thing is, as you travel around the Midwest, how much you see their names appear mm-hmm. repeatedly, like in Indianapolis and Columbus, and even Springfield, when we were up there at Ferncliff. It turns out the guy Strauch was up there with those guys, and their designer was a disciple of his. And it's just a lot of these guys were famous. To your point, Spring Grove influenced a lot of things, definitely, especially in this region.
Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna go to I guess it's time for prognostication here. First off, you know, some of the things we've discussed you've loosely touched on, but you know what, I'm curious, in a 2-part plan, what do you immediately see in the future, some of the things you're targeting for 2021, and then where do you hope your operation, as I guess as a whole, as you are evolving into more of a cemetery expert, where do you want to be in 5 years from now? I know it's a corny question, but it's not that corny.
I hope that my work with the Dunwoody Preservation Trust will have resulted in more local people getting interested in Dunwoody history and the people that were pioneers there, because Dunwoody's a bedroom community, And we didn't officially become a city until about 10 years ago. Wow. We didn't have our own government. We didn't have our own police. We had a name, but I don't think I would reason to say that a lot of people that have moved here within the last couple of years have no clue of the place. And I think and hope that in the next 5 years that by my efforts, we'll reach out more to them and they'll have an opportunity to learn that history. As far as the blog goes, I would like to get into more doing videos, which I've just started doing in the last couple of years, and perhaps writing on a shorter way. I write long, and I write long because I like to include as much as I can, but I know the American attention span is limited. And I think it might help to shorten up things in the blog and getting more into, social media. I try to do that with Facebook, but I'm trying to do that with Twitter now as well, because there is not much of a presence for American cemetery bloggers. There are a lot of British ones and Canadians, actually.
Right.
But there are not a lot of American voices out there. And I feel like I'm kind of pioneering in that way because I've been to a lot of American cemeteries that have not seen coverage on Twitter, and people are finding me and going, oh, well, nobody else is doing this. It has been doing this much. We want to know more. And that's been fun to make contacts in that arena. And I hope to kind of expand that so that, that also becomes more approachable. I think some of it is regarded as very serious, buttoned up stuff, but I try to include some humor in what I post because, as you said, while cemeteries can be gloomy, sad, mournful places, they can also be beautiful, relaxing, meditative places as well, where you can have good memories of your loved one and enjoy a walk with your, friend, your partner or your child, and enjoy some downtime away from, your job and your anxieties about life. So it's there's just all kinds of possibilities that I'm hoping to explore in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think as long as you continue on your mission and hopefully we can help each other over the years. Yeah. I think that is what it's about. It's once the people learn the history and they learn to respect some of those things instead of being scared to talk about them. And, I believe a lot of it is that shroud of fear that Hollywood and the funeral industry have put over it, so that, because it is an entire culture thing where we have 100 years of people who have been terrified of death.
Right.
And there's no reason to be. And I believe we shine a light on something that truly needs to be shined a light on. And I enjoy the history of it. I know you do constantly when we discover things. Or you mentioned it early in our interview about the person who was the highway named after. I love when I can find out where the people are that the local streets are named after. That is exciting to me. And I want to share that with the local history, with children even, because they're the ones that go, hey, I live on Pool Road. Well, who's Poole? You go, hey, it's Mr. Poole. He's the guy that owned this farm 100 years ago.
And right, exactly. And like I featured the stained glass window in the Carew Mausoleum at the end of my blog post, my Spring Grove installment number 3 last week. And I didn't know until I started digging into that. I mean, I'm sure everyone in Cincinnati knows this, but I didn't. I wasn't aware that that the Carew Tower was named after this guy, and that this guy was a clothier and a successful one, but not as successful as you might think to have a tower that tall and, outstanding Art Deco murals inside of it.
Right.
I mean, they named it after him because I guess they bulldozed his, buildings to build it, and somehow his name got attached to it. And now it's the second tallest building in Cincinnati and has a great history to it. I mean, amazing amount of money spent on it in the Great Depression. Amazing that it even got built in the first place. Right. And the first time I ever saw that I can remember seeing that building was when I was watching WKRP in Cincinnati as a kid. There it is, right there. And that's the kind of everyday stuff that people don't know about. And if you and I can tap them into that, it's so much the better.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. The people need to know about, I feel they need to know about the history of their town. And I am more than happy to let them know. Yeah. That is one of my missions. Well, Tracy, I want to tell you, I appreciate talking to you. It has been fantastic.
Oh, well, thank you for inviting me. I've enjoyed every minute.
We cross promote a lot. I know us, we've been doing a lot of things in Twitter and ping-ponging back and forth. And because we need to get the information out there to the point, you know, so people respect respecting the cemeteries is one of the missions. And I feel over the last 5 years, you have made amazing bounds, leaps and bounds in helping the mission of this. So I appreciate you joining us. Again, we're going to have all the contact information, but it's quite simply, we promote her website a lot and we run commercials even. But it's adventuresincemeteryhopping.com.
Yep.
And we look forward to hearing from you again on the cemetery podcast here and finding out what's going on. But again, everybody, you can find out what's going on with Tracy on her website as well as on contact with ours, because she helps contribute to the Necrotourist as well. So again, thank you for joining us, and we look forward to talking to you in the future.
Awesome. Thank you, Ken.
All right. Thank you.
Be sure to check out the Cemetery Podcast website at thefuneralsource.org/cemetery-podcast.
All right, I want to thank everybody who joined me this week for the Cemetery Podcast. I especially would like to thank my guest, Tracy Rylands from Adventures in Cemetery Hopping. I would like to thank my traveling partner, Charlotte Graves, also Senior Bull. I would also like to thank everybody who tunes in and or joins me on the website. Remember, you can do it at thenecrotourist.com or at thecemeterypodcast.com. Both are available on Facebook. You can find us, hopefully, this podcast in every outlet you can find a podcast. And if not, recommend it. Ask for it. It's the Cemetery Podcast. It's that simple. And until next time, this is Ken Negley from the Necrotourist saying, I'll see you in the yard.